Welcome to Earth2.net, the show, episode 1150. As always, I'm Michael Sims, and thank you for listening to Earth2.net, the show. Today, if you're listening to this on the day it drops, October 25th, 2025, is the 20th anniversary of Earth2.net, the show. Yes, the very first episode of Earth2.net, the show, the very first episode ever dropped on October 25th. 2005. Jeez Louise, that was lifetimes ago. I was 28, y'all. No, 27. Jeez, I added an extra couple of months to my age here. I was 27 when this whole thing started, and now I'm a lot older, and I'm real close to 50, and that's a shame, but I don't mean to bring the mood down with that. I am here to say thank you to everybody who has ever had anything to do with Earth2.net, the show, and Earth2.net in general. And of course, that includes every single listener. You know, I don't care if you listen to one episode or if you've listened to every episode. You've been here, you've tuned in, you've just supported the show in that way, and that I will ever, forever, I'm stumbling over my words, I'm sorry, I will forever be grateful for that. And the same goes to everybody who has devoted their time, their energy, their thoughts, their voice, themselves to Earth2.net and Earth2.net, this show. Earth2.net itself is now pushing 22 years. I believe March or April of next year makes it the 22nd anniversary of the site. And unfortunately, I let the 20th anniversary of the site go by without saying anything, and I just simply could not do that. Absolutely could not do that with Earth2.net, this show. I don't have much more of an intro than that. Just really wanted to say thank you, truly thank you to everybody out there. I do plan to do some sort of themed episode at some point in the near future. I haven't quite settled on a theme yet, so if anybody's got any ideas, you can email them to theshow@earth2.net. That's theshow@earth-2.net, and I will gladly consider them. But I just really could not let the anniversary go without saying something, without just truly saying thank you to everybody who's been here from the beginning to now, or if this is your first episode, whatever that looks like. Just thank you. And please don't say 20 more years. I'd like 20 more years, but I don't know if I want to be doing this when I'm looking at 70. So, let's get on with the show. I'm just being silly now. But before we do, again, yeah, just truly thank you, every single one of you. We'll be right back.
man, it's been like 20 years. How's it going?
It is going.
And that's all
well.
My fault. I just stepped on you. I apologize for that. But that's all my fault. So I apologize for that.
No, no worries.
But yeah, you're doing good.
I'm doing good.
Good as can be.
Yeah. And yourself, sir.
Exactly the same as what we just said there. So, yeah. So we decided that what we were going to do today was an all we had. We haven't done. Do you know the last one of these we did? You don't have to look it up if you don't know. But I know you were the one that said, like, hey, how about we do this? Yeah.
I don't.
No big deal. No big deal.
Now you got me curious.
So, you know, Dan, we have a spreadsheet that Dan curated, and it's a great spreadsheet of all these comic book related movies that preceded essentially Blade, Spider-Man, the X-Men, the birth of the modern comic book movie. And we like to look at it from time to time to discuss movies that, you know what? We were grateful for what we had. Or maybe we weren't grateful, but it was all we had. And today we decided to look at the 1990 Captain America movie.
Now, you and I did the math. You and I have been podcasting together for 17 years.
I know, right?
And somehow... we have managed to avoid this movie for 17 years.
It's called By Design.
Yeah.
No, I'm being unfair to this movie. I am being unfair to this one. But yeah, like, no, this is one. It kind of surprised me that we hadn't done this one yet, in all honesty. You
same.
Know? Yeah. So this is neither of our first time seeing it.
No.
Do you know the first time you saw it or how many times you've seen it?
I've seen it loads of times. Mm-hmm. The first time I saw it probably would have been when it came out on video back in 1990.
Oh, okay. And this was direct to video, right?
In America it was, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And I probably saw a bootleg that would have been picked up at a con, but I don't know. It was the 90s when I saw it. It wasn't as late as the 2000s, but I genuinely don't know where I was, who I was with. But the con thing, the bootleg at a con, is the only thing that I can think of. And, you know, just a little aside here, I miss those bootleg booths at conventions. I get why they had to go. I get why streamings, like YouTubes, you can find some things on YouTubes, such as this movie. And, you know, the torrent sites and all this and that. But, man, those bootleg booths, they were like something.
It was just, you could... I have been at cons where they still exist.
Oh, okay.
And it is like just fried gold. Just, you know, oh my, you know, just an entire corner table devoted to, oh my God, I remember this.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the best part of going to a convention for me was always finding those booths. Yeah, it absolutely 100% was.
I mean, just for... never mind. It wasn't even for me, like the movies you couldn't find elsewhere, like the Fantastic Four movie. Oh my God. Yeah. You know, or stuff like this, but TV shows or non-American cuts of movies, just things you literally could not get in the United States. It's like, wait, there's never been a collection of the RoboCop TV show, but this guy has it on VHS or, depending on how late in the 90s it was, really shitty DVDs or CDs. I will take those, please. Yes, I will give you $100 for 20 DVDs of whatever the hell I was not looking for, but now I need in my life.
Like, don't get me wrong. We live in an era where anything that we want, we can get our hands on pretty much immediately. This is better. Don't get me wrong. But that whole experience of discovering this slightly illicit thing was, like you go to the table and it's like, oh my God, this guy's got a whole tape that's full of episodes of the A-Team.
Right. Yes.
I don't think I've ever needed anything more than I need this right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you didn't go to that booth, and we will get to the movie, guys, trust me. Mm-hmm. You didn't go to booths like that specifically looking for something, or maybe you did, but mm-hmm. like it was partially about the, for me, it was about the surprise of what you would find mixed with a sense of, you knew it was wrong. Mm-hmm. It was, there was a wrongness to it. You understood it wasn't the most legal thing in the world, but the cops aren't going to stop me, man. Yeah. I'm going to spend $25 on night court, like two tapes of night court or something. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Fuck you. I won't do what you tell me.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I want to see what Dan and Harry and Christine and Roz and all them are up this week. Mm. Yeah. Even though I've seen every episode, but now I can watch it again. Yeah. You know? So anyways, that's where the bulk of us would have seen it. But it sounds like you might have seen it legally, though. You said shortly after it came out on tape.
Yeah. I mean, it came out on VHS. Mm. Like, you know, because I remember being in a movie theater and seeing a poster for this.
Oh.
Like, coming next year, because that was the plan.
Yeah.
You know, coming next year. And of course, that never happened. Mm. Because, well, I'm sure we'll get into that, because, ugh. But, yeah, no, they just again, like, similar to the Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just put it on video and sent it directly to the stores.
Yeah.
I guess it did have, like, some overseas theatrical release.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, not here. And it's funny that you say that, you know, you had to go to a con to get a stolen copy, because it was not hard to find.
Yeah, like, my memory could be wrong about that. I could have seen it at a friend who had rented it. I don't remember renting it myself.
Yeah.
At Blockbuster or some of the ma and pops that were around, but right. I'm pretty sure it was bootleg for me. But before we do get into it, what were you referencing there about where you were like, oh, there's a poster coming next year, and then you're like, oh, and then we'll get into that. Like, what is?
Oh, just that this movie's is? Just. I mean, again, for and I'm sure we'll, you know. Midnight Movie Show has ruined me for bad movies. You know, it's like, oh, wow, this is so much fun. But it's a bad movie.
Yeah.
It's a very bad movie. And it did not reflect well on the publishing company that licensed it.
Yeah.
You know, this is an era when Marvel was selling its characters for McDonald's coupons, you know, to whoever asked for them first.
So
there were some very bad Marvel movies being made at this time.
Yeah. And I assume, based on this being 1990, this was greenlit because of Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if it was something that was, I say, seriously in production before 89, or if it was like, hey, Batman was a hit, just here's some money, go, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Canon had the rights for a few years, but yeah, I don't think that it was like fast-tracked until after Batman made all the money.
Gotcha. Okay.
Also, just to kind of get back to an earlier thing, the last time we did this was January 2023. We did Birds of Prey.
Oh, did we pair that with the Harley Quinn movie?
We did.
Yeah, so we did the Birds of Prey pilot, and then what was it? Harley Quinn, the Birds of Prey and the Emancipation of Harley Quinn. Is that what that was called?
That's something the
like
one. That?
Yeah. That was a good one. I really enjoyed that one because I like the Harley Quinn movie, and that Birds of Prey pilot ain't bad, if I recall.
It's really not.
Yeah.
Again, for what it is and when it came out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So should I briefly recap this and then we get into it?
Let's do it.
Okay, so it's World War II's going on, and we're in Italy, and there's a little boy playing piano, and all of a sudden a bunch of fucking Nazis jump in, and they kidnap the little boy, and the little boy becomes the Red Skull. Oh, no. 7 years later, or something like that, America goes, oh, crap, we have a problem. We're now in World War II. Let's take a guy who was born with polio and stick a needle in his arm and make him Captain America. Yeah! I'm being reductive, but that's what we get. So Captain America, or Steve Rogers, becomes Captain America. And as it is in the comics, the scientist that makes him Captain America is murdered. And Steve is like blown away himself. He takes like two nasty bullets, like right through his body, winds up in the hospital. But he finds out that there's the Germans have a missile or some sort of weapon that's going to strike somewhere in the United States. in about 5 days' time. So he pulls himself out of the hospital bed and he says, you know what? If I'm the only hope, I'm the only hope. So they put the Captain America costume on him. They ship him off to Germany. Is it actually Germany? I mean, they're Nazis, but I don't know if they say
safe as Germany or Italy, because most of this movie takes place in Italy.
Yeah. So
but like the Red Skull is Italian in this movie.
Yeah. I don't understand. Like, I don't mind the change, but I'm like, what the hell was that about? But whatever. So Cap infiltrates the base where this missile is going to launch. That's headed straight for the White House. The White House is ground zero. He has a fight with the Red Skull. The Red Skull beats the shit out of him and straps him to the rocket. Before the rocket takes off, Cap grabs Red Skull's hand and he's going to take the Red Skull with him. He's like, if I'm going to die, you're coming with me. And Red Skull's like, nah, that ain't going to happen. And he cuts off his own hand. The rocket does blast off. The Red Skull survives. He stays in the base or whatever. And just before the rocket is about to crash into the White House and blow it up, Steve is able to kick like one of the fins on the rocket and sends it off to Alaska. So this rocket has flown from Germany or Italy to Washington, D.C. and now up to Alaska. While that was going on, there's a little kid hanging around the White House at like 3 a.m. with his camera. He happens to take a picture of this. I'm sure this kid won't be relevant to the plot. Oh no, 50 years later, he's the president of the United States and Captain America's woken up in the tundra. I say tundra, the ice, whatever. Mm-hmm. Cap goes home. He discovers his girlfriend, Beatrice, I think was her name, is now aged. Bernie, yes, sorry. She's aged because time has passed, and she has a daughter. This is Sharon, I believe. Mm-hmm. And now it's up to them to stop the Red Skull, who is now, I don't remember what, is he going by an actual name now, or is he still going by the Red Skull?
He is going by, like, they give his real name, it's DeSantis. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, he's the Red Skull when he's doing bad guy stuff, right. He's DeSantis when he's being him.
Yeah, okay. But he's had plastic surgery, so his face is scarred, but it's no longer, well, red. And they are going to, they being the baddies here, which include a U.S. general, are going to kidnap the president, put in some sort of device in him, or some sort of serum or something, and make him their pawn, so to speak, so they can officially rule the world. And it's up to Steve and Sharon to, and the president to some extent, to stop the baddies. And the baddies include not just the Red Skull, but also the Red Skull's daughter and like her really progressive, pretty much all female group of ass kicking ladies. Like, I think there's like one guy and there's like a whole other like henchmen, bunch of henchmen, but the Red Skull's daughter, who they call Valentina. They took the name Valentina and made it the Red Skull's daughter. Okay. What do you call it? Yeah. She just got an all female squad. So that's cool. And then Cap saves the day by, you know, sort of killing the Red Skull, 'cause he's about to like blow Europe off the map or something. And I think it's unclear if Valentina dies, but I think you can take it as read that she does. No pun intended there. And then, yeah, Cap saves the day. The world is safe. And that's that. So what are you thinking of 1990s Captain America?
Well, like I said, I really think that Midnight Movie Show has kind of altered the way that I watch these kinds of movies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have spent the last 30-plus years absolutely excoriating this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. You know, it's a cheap piece of shit that nobody should ever see. It's awful. It's terrible. Oh my God, what the fuck? And watching it yesterday, and I'm like, I'm actually kind of enjoying this.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. Like, we've got a movie. Okay, basically, Menachem Golan got the rights to this movie for canon. He took them with him to 21st century when he left canon, but for all intents and purposes, this is a canon movie.
Yes, it is.
So we've got Menachem Golan hired Albert Pune to direct a Captain America movie. And honestly, this is the absolute best outcome that you're going to get from that starting situation. Right? Mm-hmm. You know? It is cheap. It is absolute nonsense. any passing familiarity with the source material is coincidental at best.
Right, yeah.
You know? Yeah. But it's a canon movie.
Yeah.
You know? The editing, I'm sure we'll talk about the editing, is super weird, but there are halfway decent action sequences in this movie.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Whether it's a good decision or not, the costume is very comics accurate.
Yeah.
They make the best use they can of the limited resources they have. Mm-hmm. And there's just a gigantic list of how did they get this person to be in this movie.
Yes, we are going to get to that.
So many people who are better than this movie acting in this movie. Uh-huh. It's kind of weird. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I was really shocked and amazed to actually kind of find myself having a good time with this. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Yeah, I think I've just hit that age, or at least the stage in my life, where I'm like, look, I've seen this before, and even if I hadn't, mm-hmm. there's a good chance this isn't going to be great.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to sit here and watch this, why not have as much fun with it if I can?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I tried to do. And for the most part, I succeeded in that.
Yeah.
Because I'll be honest, like, this movie bores me up until Steve and Sharon go into the cafe and into the basement. And then he actually starts becoming Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's worn the costume pretty much from like the 10th minute of this movie, if not sooner. Mm-hmm. But he didn't feel like Captain America until he was in the black shirt with the, I don't know if it was like the he had a big metal thing that stood in for the shield at that mm-hmm. point. I think it was like the plate to a boiler or a furnace or something. I don't know. And he starts kicking the shit out of people. And I'm like, okay. And then they go to Italy. And I'm like, that's like, so from that fight in the cafe up through the end of the movie, I'm like, this isn't dumb but decent enough Captain America movie. Mm-hmm. Right here, everything before that is just sort of like, it's just, I shouldn't say boring, I used that word before, it's, I don't care. Mm-hmm. We're not given a reason to care about Steve or his life before he becomes, like, we're just thrown in and he's already been chosen to become Captain America. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? We don't know. You know, why did they choose this guy? I was glib about it earlier, and I apologize for that, but they say several times that he had polio. But so why, how did he get chosen? Like, I don't need the backstory we're given in the comics, but in also the first Captain America, the first Avenger. But I need a little more. I need a reason to care about Steve beyond he's the hero and you should care about him, right. You know? But yeah, pretty much once that cafe fight starts, and then through the end of the movie, that's where I think it's actually a decent movie. Mm-hmm. Everything before that, I'm like, I just don't care, you know? So, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much my take.
Yeah, I think that that's accurate. And I think that that's fair. I think that it's a much better movie in its second half than it is in its first.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's not really, he doesn't feel like the character until, yeah, roughly about that halfway point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because he spends an awful lot of time in this movie getting his ass handed to him.
Well, let me just say, like, I'm okay. And you weren't implying otherwise, I don't think, with the first time he meets Red Skull, him getting his ass handed to him. Because
mm-hmm.
Red Skull's been Red Skull for, like, I mean, he goes from being, like, 14 to being, like, 40, the Red Skull mm-hmm. does, in the span of 7 years. So I don't know what the hell happened there. Right. But whatever, somehow the super soldier serum that made the Red Skull aged him up, whatever. But so the Red Skull's had 7 years to, like, perfect his strength and his fighting technique and his mind and all this. Steve's had, like, 5 days, and he's been shot in the chest twice. He doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
He flat out says he hasn't had any training, but there's no time for that. So that was cool that he got his ass beat, and then we jump ahead from the 1940s up through, I think this movie is set in, like, 93 or something like that. So we jump ahead roughly 50 years. That's fine. But even after that, he's still getting his ass handed to him, like, a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, you're Captain America. It's, you know, do a little better, man, you know.
So here's, I mean, again, it's like one of the things that are a problem that you used to run into a lot with superhero movies, which is there's always the desire to have the costume be comics accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But then you run into this issue where an actual human person in a Captain America costume looks completely Magoo. You know?
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, there really is no good way to put together a comics accurate classic Captain America costume on a person and have it look good.
Yeah.
It can't be done. And like, this costume is like, you can see where the money went. Like, it's a good looking costume in terms of its accuracy and, you know, like, it looks like it's made out of latex. That cannot have been comfortable.
Yeah, whatever that was, I was definitely looking at that going, it's like smushing his face.
Yes, it is.
You know? So,
like, his nose is flat across his face. But they clearly put a lot of effort into making it. And he looks ridiculous when he's wearing it.
Yeah.
Because it's a ridiculous costume. You know? Like, honestly, the only person I've ever seen that looks halfway okay in a regular, honest-to-God Captain America costume is Chris Evans in that in the USO scenes in the first movie. Like, that, he looks halfway decent, but he's supposed to look stupid.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know? You know, luckily, we've gotten to a point where we're okay with them making little tweaks and changes so the costumes look okay. But yeah, he looks really, really dumb. And I think that that leads to sort of a, this kind of a reticence to show him in the costume for like the middle hour of the movie. You know, like, he's in it for like the first 15 minutes and he's in it for the last 15. But he's not wearing it pretty much at all for that middle hour.
Right. Yeah. And there's one scene in particular where he is wearing it and he's running down a beach, but he's got like an overcoat on. So he's definitely wearing it, but they're still kind of like hiding it to some. I mean, he's in California running down the street in that costume. People are going to be like, what the heck? Like, the coat is practical, but it felt like they were kind of hiding it a little bit too. I don't know. You know,
I agree.
I was grateful that they did put him in it right away. That it wasn't him just in the black turtleneck or whatever he was wearing up to the point where it's like, now I got to be Captain America. And it's like the last 20 minutes of the movie. That they were like, no, we paid for this costume. We paid for the name and the rights and the look. We're going to put him in it, you know. But, you know, because I feel like another production studio would have done it where, with what I just described. You know, where it's like, just put him in the black turtleneck until this point where we have to, with rolled eyes, be loyal to the comics, you know? So, but outside of the mask, which just, whether it was the material or whatnot, just looked too small. I dug the costume. You know, I really did. And I like the fact that they had no problem with it getting ripped to shreds on multiple occasions. It looked like legit busted up, that costume. Like, they would fray the edge of the gloves. There'd be like slashes where he would get like cut or just what. Like, it, like, it was decent for what it was besides the mask. And it looked like he actually took a kicking throughout the movie. So, as you said, this is where they put their money, not just in the costume, but also the design of it as he progressively gets deeper and deeper into the action. And just, you know, the whole John McClane thing, you know, where he starts out looking this way, and by the end of the movie, he's just this mass of just like blood and a t-shirt that's no longer white and that sort of thing. Like, you can tell he's been through hell, you know? So I dug it for what it was, the costume, that is.
I'll agree with you. I'll agree with you there. I think that, you know, when I say it looks dumb, it's 99% of that is the mask.
And they couldn't do like the Batman or Flash TV show thing where they make the mask a little, I don't want to say triangular, but you know what I mean? Like, because that's not how the mask looks. But if maybe if they had done it, it would look less ridiculous, you know, or less, less uncomfortable. I'm not going to say comfortable, but less uncomfortable.
Like, I know that, you know, it, the movie tends to get some flack for the rubber ears. But that's just a weird design choice anyway. That's something that Kirby liked to do. And that's, it's a weird look.
What do you mean, the ears being out?
But the wings are just the wings are where 90% of the weirdness comes from.
I didn't notice them until, I don't remember the scene, it was late in the movie, and I was like, oh yeah, this thing has the wings, because I thought the rubber ears were the sequel. I forgot. I wasn't even like looking for the rubber ears in this one. You know. But yeah, at one point I saw the wings. I'm like, man, I love Cap's costume in the comics. But the wings in live action do look a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is because, again, in the Reb Brown movies, they were painted on the helmet.
Yeah.
And in the Chris Evans movie, obviously, they're painted on the helmet there, too.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the only time that I don't think they had them at all in the serial.
Okay.
But I haven't seen that in, like, decades.
Yeah,
so I can't say that for sure.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think this is the only time that they tried to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were two things I noticed where I felt like the director, who is he? You said his name, but I'm not sure I know what he's done.
Albert Pune.
Mm-hmm.
He did, he was like a big canon guy. He did The Sword and the Sorcerer.
Oh.
Which we watched way back when.
Yeah, yeah.
He did Cyborg.
Oh.
He did, I believe he did Nemesis.
Okay.
For canon. Yeah, he was a big, like a low budget action adventure guy that Gallan used for a lot of stuff like this.
Okay. So there were two moments where I could, at least for my eyes, felt like he was drawing inspiration from other better movies. Mm-hmm. The fight, the first fight between the Red Skull and Cap, where the Red Skull's sort of like taunting him. Mm-hmm. And then he keeps turning to like the Nazis or whatever that are on like that platform, like looking down on the fight. That was 100% Rocky IV. Once Ivan and Rocky are fighting in Moscow,
yeah,
and you see all the Soviets, like Gorbachev in air quotes there, like watching them, I just felt Rocky IV in that. But then the motorbike chase through the forest, come on, that's the speeder bikes on the forest moon of Endor.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
come on, you are 100% being like, yes, I know it's been 7 years or whatever, but Return of the Jedi, let's just do it. Not it a complaint.
Absolutely it is. I mean, although, again, that really was a really cool sequence.
It was. Yes, it was.
You know, mm-hmm. like Dirt Bikes never hurt a movie.
Right. <You
know? laughs> Dirt Bikes and Machine Guns. And you got to think he's tired because he's walked all the way from Alaska to Santa Monica.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. My broken comic book brain, though, when they just showed, like, Canada, I was, or whatever they said, so I don't remember what they put on the screen. I was like, oh, Wolverine's here. I'm like, no, Wolverine's not here, Mike. Wolverine is most decidedly not here.
Yeah.
You know.
Fox has the rights to that guy.
Though there were references to Namor and the original Human Torch.
Mm-hmm.
I did not catch that in any of the, because this is probably at least the fourth time I've seen this.
Yeah.
I've never caught that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I thought that was really cool that they just like threw those names. So we know in this world, like the Invaders exist.
Yeah.
Or maybe not the Invaders exist, but Namor and the Human Torch do. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Golden Age timely lineup is here,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one thing that I do want to talk about is just why are these people in this movie? We've got Ronnie Cox. We've got Ned Beatty. We've got Darren fucking McGavin. Melinda Dillon. Bill Mumy. Although Bill Mumy is always happy to be in movies like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like Michael Norrie. How did they get these people in this movie?
They had to promise them this is going to be Marvel's Batman. They had
to. I guess.
You know.
I mean, Ned Beatty never said no to a movie, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like just outstanding the people that are in this movie, and they're giving it their all.
Oh yeah,
I mean Ronnie Cox is here, like he's agreed to do this and he's doing this thing.
I can't say I've seen a lot of movies he's in, but I've never felt like he half-asses it,
no.
And he seems to get the tone of what the movies are. Like he'll play, from what I've seen, he'll play his role straight, but he understands the movie he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's the president of the United States in this movie. So he's going to play that. But when he realizes Captain America is back, he gets excited and he calls his best friend, you know, mm-hmm. Ned Beatty's character. And he's like, oh my God, that guy that was on that rocket that I somehow snapped a picture of. Okay, he's back. Wow. Like he just becomes a little kid again, even though he's the leader of the free fucking world or whatever, you know? And so like, I dug that. You know what I mean? That he's like, I'm going to play the president, but I'm not afraid to get excited and childlike again. And nothing he does is tongue in cheek, you know?
Yeah. Like I love when Steve is rescuing him from the castle, mm-hmm. and he's basically like, oh, wow, I can't believe I'm here with Captain America. Yeah. Like, you're the president, dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, again, he, everything that he's in, he just brings something to it. Is Darren McGavin.
Yes.
Oh man, he is having a ball. Like, he knows he's in a terrible movie, but he's having a great time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've seen this movie, I don't even know how many times, way more than four, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. This is the first time that I realized, like, just like doing my research while I'm watching the movie, that Darren McGavin's character is Bill Mumy's character 50 years later.
I only realized that because I was looking at the credits, because I was trying to figure out which character Bill Mumy was, right? I had no clue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've never connected them before now, because the movie just doesn't call any attention to it.
So then that begs the question. So Bill Mumy was the one who led the guy down into the cafe in the 40s or the 30s or whatever, the 40s, that killed the female scientist that created Captain America, right?
Yes, that's right.
So was he in on it the whole time then, or did he turn over the 50 years? They don't mention it. You're not supposed to think about it, but I'm thinking about it.
I think that he's been bad from the beginning.
Okay.
I think that he brought in the assassin. Okay. On purpose. I think that was an intentional thing.
Yeah, I'm going to have to rewatch the character's reaction when the assassin reveals himself, because I didn't realize he was, you know, General Kolchak. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't think to look to see what he was doing. So now that I realize that, I'm going to go back and look, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but okay. Okay.
Also, Ralphie's mom and Ralphie's old man are both in the same movie.
Wait, where's Ralphie's mom?
She was Steve's mom.
Was that her? I didn't realize that. Oh.
It's Melinda Dillon.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I really did not suss that out. But yeah, yeah. Yeah, I debated whether I was going to call him General Kolchak or General the Old Man. Yeah. I had it as, in my notes, I had it as General the Old Man up until I was like, wait, but he was Kolchak. So no, Kolchak, we're going with Kolchak. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I got to tell you, if this movie could have been like, so much better if Sharon had been Cynthia Rothrock.
Oh yeah.
Like every time I see Sharon, I'm like, God, this, I just want Cynthia Rothrock. In this. You know,
just know. Anything's better with scissor kicks, scorpion kicks, right? Like, Cynthia Rothrock has never made a movie worse.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And this is like 5 years late, or 5 years after, is it Yes, Madam? Mm-hmm. So she's on the scene. She's been around for a while. So she's not an unknown quantity.
I want to say this is the same year she made China O'Brien. So she's making American movies at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it was just like, honestly, like something about her hair, the actress who played Sharon, something about her hair as Sharon made me think of that. So I don't mean to be going off on this weird tangent.
But, yeah, you know, it's a canon movie in 1990. I think it's fair to think that Cynthia Rothrock maybe could have been in this. And I know that it was 21st century. I know that Golan had left canon in this movie, but it's a canon movie. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, totally. Yeah, I was kind of surprised that the canon logo wasn't in front of this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be shy about admitting I was disappointed the Canon logo wasn't in front of it.
Yeah.
Because that logo, it's like when you see the New Line Cinema logo, you know what you're getting. You see the Canon logo, you know what. So we didn't get the logo, but it is a Canon movie, as you
absolutely say. Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's like The Punisher. The Punisher is a New World movie, but that's a Canon movie.
100%.
You know?
Yeah.
What did you think of the Red Skull?
I liked the look of him in the beginning when he was the Red Skull. You can tell it was like a prosthetic, but I mean, it was going to be a prosthetic one way or the other, but I kind of dug it. And I don't know. I liked the character. I liked that he saw Steve tauntingly or not. He kept calling him little brother. So, like, I kind of like that he saw him as, like, the other side, the whole, where the opposite sides are the same coin type thing. But they are. That's what they are, at least in this movie and in other adaptations. So I kind of dug that he saw him as, like, the pathetic version of him. You know what I mean? I didn't mind the change to him being Italian. I still don't get why they did it. I might even just be because they knew they were going to be filming it in Italy, so might as well just make the guy Italian. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I kind of... I mean, he's just a mastermind villain, and I liked the makeup on him as the Red Skull, and 50 years later, even though his face isn't red anymore. Mm-hmm. His performance was fine for me. Yeah. What about you?
I'm kind of there with you. I feel like he was... Again, I liked his Red Skull. I was a little less... It's not his performance, but the whole idea of the evil businessman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's... I get, I'm sure that the makeup was super expensive and they couldn't keep it going for the entire movie. But, you know, it's just... There's so many evil businessmen in these kinds of movies. I don't feel like we need another one.
Yeah.
But by and large, I think he did a decent job. He was... like evil,
right? Yeah.
And for some reason had a Transylvanian accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps go for 20 minutes, you know? But yeah, I thought he was pretty decent. You know, he did the job he was there to do.
Yeah I mean, it's a, I hate to say it this way, but for the era, you know, he's a comic book villain. You know,
yeah. I mean, honestly, the fact that we got him as the Red Skull at all was kind of remarkable.
Yeah, yeah.
In that day and age.
Yeah, yeah. But besides, like, his look at the beginning, and Steve's costume at the beginning, and more towards the end, there really isn't anything that marks this out as, like, specifically a Captain America movie. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I do.
If you just sub in evil businessman, as you were saying, and action hero with either martial arts or guns or knives or some sort of weapons beyond the shield, like, this movie really doesn't change. Like, you'd have to, you maybe change, like, the whole 50-year time jump. Okay, fine, yeah, whatever. Set it a few weeks later. He's been in the hospital for a month or something, and everybody thought he was dead, but oh no, he's back. The hero's back in action, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, to me, that's, like, kind of, like, the biggest sin of this movie is, like, it, as you said, it's, they bring the, like, there's things that are there in name, you know, but it doesn't, if you just change the costumes and a name or two, there's nothing that makes this specifically a Captain America movie, you know, if that makes sense. You know,
it does make sense. And honestly, that was not unusual for the time.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's an unfortunate reality of comic book movies at that time, Batman notwithstanding.
Right.
You know, there was always this kind of idea that, well, we'll have the main character in a goofy costume. We don't want anybody else to be in a goofy costume. You know, the audience won't be able to handle that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, other than that, it's basically, it's a very generic action movie.
Yeah, I mean, a businessman wants to take over the world. Where have I seen that before? Yeah. Oh, the 70s, the 80s, the present day White House. The shield. We got to talk about the shield.
Yes, we do.
I don't know.
There was the unfortunate decision to do a lot of close-ups of that shield.
Yes, it looks fine in anything but a close-up, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's never not obviously plastic.
Right.
But yeah, close-up, it is very obviously plastic.
Yeah, they could have solved it with one line. Like we as comic geeks, we know what the shield is actually made of, you know, but, like, in the movie, they just could have been like, oh, it's made out of some plastic hybrid that's indestructible or something. So it justifies its look, you know, later on. Then you'd be more forgiving of it. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, it really does just look like an oversized fucking Frisbee. And I hate to say it because it's, like, one of Captain America's, like, most defining images, or it's one of the most iconic images of Captain America as a shield. And if you don't get that right, what are you doing? You know?
Well, I think that, I mean, you know, it looks like plastic, like a plastic Frisbee. It flies like a plastic Frisbee. You know, anytime that he throws it, it's very, very obviously lightweight and not you know, actually going to do any damage to anything he comes into contact with.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't look great. And even though it was like the design of it was perfect,
mm-hmm.
but the construction of it was not.
Yeah. Yeah. They do a couple of tricks where they try to show you how hard it is. It gets thrown into the ground and sticks there. It gets thrown into the wall and sticks there. Mm-hmm. And there was a point at the end when he threw the shield and he threw it at the Red Skull. Mm-hmm. For a second, I thought he was going to take off the Red Skull's other hand
mm-hmm.
that was holding the detonator.
Mm-hmm.
But it just hits him, and then a dummy falls into the sea.
Yes, it does.
So I was like, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But so they tried. Oh, yeah. So the point being with that is I thought they were going to show how, I don't want to say violent, but just how tough that thing is and the damage it could do.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get over the way it looked. But I don't know. I want to give them credit for trying, but it just didn't work out with that thing. You know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Speaking of that scene, did he behead Valentina?
I'm not entirely sure what happened. Because did he throw it at her? I don't remember.
He threw it at the Red Skull. The Red Skull dummy went flopping into the Adriatic.
Uh-huh.
And then when it came back, it did whatever it did to her.
Yeah, I mean, we get a close-up of her face, right?
Yeah.
And then we don't see her anymore. So whenever you do that, I think the implication is mm-hmm. beheading, but...
He even does the quip, heads up.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, then yeah, then he beheaded her, I guess. Yeah. Holy crap, I did not...
Well, he did it before the actual contact was made.
But still, yeah, then I think that is the implication. You know, right. So
yeah, I just wanted to see if you fell on that side of the argument.
Yeah, I will. Like I said, there's a couple of things I'm going to check out on this. And that's another thing I'm going to recheck out is but I think you're right then. Absolutely. You know, cause after they cut to her and then they cut away, I thought they were going to show her body there, or inevitably the Italian police would show up and mm-hmm. you see her getting carted off in handcuffs because this is an era of filmmaking where sometimes one villain would live, you know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. and that would just be sequel bait.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, if there's a sequel, is, you know, Valentina going to be the new villain? It's like, no.
I don't know if you picked up on this, but I want to talk a little bit about the editing of the action sequences.
Yeah, you mentioned this before. I didn't pick up on anything. What's going on?
They are edited within an inch of their life.
Mm.
Like anytime that an action sequence starts, you get shots that are fractions of a second long.
Hmm.
And it's just changing angles and going back and forth and doing things. And a lot of people that watch this movie think it looks great. Like it makes it look exciting and mm-hmm. fast paced. And other people look at it and think that it makes it look really sloppy and disjointed.
Mm.
And I was wondering, and I didn't know if you picked up on it, if you had an opinion on that.
I didn't and I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I really didn't notice it, so it didn't bother me, nor was it in such a place where I was like, that was really great editing. I just didn't mm-hmm. notice it. What about you then? So
I tend to like it.
Yeah.
I tend to think that it makes a movie that is otherwise kind of slow.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gives it these little bursts of energy
mm-hmm.
that I think works really well for Captain America.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is not a very physically active movie.
Uh-uh.
You know? Like, Captain America is a character that basically throws himself into a room full of bad guys and, you know, takes care of things.
Uh-huh.
Like, the elevator sequence in Winter Soldier is basically Captain America all the time.
Right?
Uh-huh. You know, that's kind of his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few action sequences where he, like, finally really kind of got to be physical.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that a lot of that had to do with the actor not being a gymnast,
mm-hmm.
you know, or a bodybuilder or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that it just made for very kinetic sequences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know that a lot of people find them very distracting, though.
I wasn't distracted. And like I said, at the end, when the action picks up, I got more into the movie. So it must have worked for me.
Okay.
You know, so, yeah. This movie does commit a sin, though.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least two scenes with motorbikes of some sort, motorcycles mm-hmm. or dirt bikes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene with a bicycle.
Yeah.
Captain America, who famously rides motorcycles.
Yeah.
Rides the bicycle. Come on, man. Put Cap on a motorcycle.
Even Red Brown got a motorcycle.
I know, right? Cap rides motorcycles because he's cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Seriously, I'm like, he stole that guy's bike. I mean, yeah. He pays for it. He throws money at him. But like, come on, man. You let him take a motorcycle.
Yeah.
So it's a silly little thing, but it's like, come the fuck on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that we've kind of danced around this. What do we think of Matt Salinger?
I don't blame him for the material he was given.
Mm-hmm.
At no point do I care about his Steve/Captain America. Mm-hmm. Even once the action picks up and he's like, no, I'm Captain America. And, you know, I got to save the day. I didn't care about him getting home to try to find his family and his ex-love. I didn't care about anything going on with Sharon. And I really feel like that's because the material didn't really, they wanted us to care without giving us reason to.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't have enough. What's the word? I want to say gusto, but that's not quite the right word. Mm-hmm. He didn't have enough weight as an actor. I don't know where this falls in his resume in terms of like acting career. Mm-hmm. But he just didn't seem to have enough experience to know how to make do and make the best of what he was given.
Mm-hmm.
So he falls flat for me as the character. But again, I don't necessarily blame him. You know, he's just, I wouldn't think anything of him if he wasn't the son of who he is. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Otherwise, yeah. He's just some blonde guy that got to play Captain America. It really could have been anybody for me. And I think they would have pretty much done the same in the role because he's just not given a lot. That's kind of my take.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of there with you. He's not great. I'm not going to lie. He's not. But he's not really given a lot to play with.
Yeah.
He's not really given a lot of opportunity to do very much.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that he tends to be surrounded by much better actors.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like every scene he's in, in a scene with a much, much better actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's just kind of bland.
Yeah.
I'm looking at his credits now, and this is fairly early in his career. It looks like, a few years before this, he was one of the frat guys in Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, geez. Okay.
He was one of the bad frat people.
A movie I'm sure holds up in 2025.
Oh, God.
No, I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, it looks like there's just a lot of like guest spots on TV,
mm-hmm.
small roles and some movie, yeah. You know. But yeah, he's not really, he doesn't have a lot of gravitas,
mm-hmm.
and he's not, he a lot of times it looks like he's reading lines instead of acting.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It seems to me,
mm-hmm.
Which is probably unfair, but he's just not really putting a lot of himself into anything that he's doing or saying.
Yeah, I don't mean to knock the guy professionally, but it seems to be clear that when it came to casting, mm-hmm. the money went to Ned Beatty, Ronnie Cox, and Darren McGavin mm-hmm. before it went to him, yeah. If that makes sense. They knew, it feels, I shouldn't say it knew, or they knew, it feels like, well, he's going to be under a mask partially, so why get someone people will recognize. I don't know. Maybe that's unfair, mm-hmm. but that's what it, that's the way I kind of read it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, they didn't, you know, this ain't Batman where they went for a name, you know, this isn't Superman where Chris Reeve was known as at least a soap actor to some degree, I believe at that point,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know how much of a name he was, but this, they just got like him.
Yeah. Like honestly, again, not to be unkind, but I do think that he's easily the weakest actor in this entire movie.
Yeah, by a mile.
Yeah. Like, at least the actress playing Sharon was fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, she had a lot of energy to her performance.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of her, I dug the moment where Cap pulls the, oh, pull over, I'm going to be sick thing a second mm-hmm. time with her.
Yeah.
So he steals the car from her, and he's doing it to get her out of action. Yeah. So she doesn't get into danger, that is. So he runs off, she follows him, and then the second she sees that they're still being followed by, like, a two dozen, like, thugs, she's mm-hmm. like, actually, you know what? I'm going to get out of here. So she followed him into action and then realized, you know what? He was right the whole time. Yeah. And, you know, she holds her own later on after she's taken hostage and whatnot. But, like, I did sort of, I love, because you don't see that with a character. Yeah. Who's like, she flat out goes, they're still following us, and then just runs away. Like, that's yeah. a smart move. That was yeah. smart. Go, get out of here. Because yeah. I was like, is she trying to, like, lure the baddies away? It's like, no, she's legit trying to get away and fell into a trap, you yeah. know? Yeah. So, but yeah, what did you think of Sharon? We haven't said much of her.
I liked her.
You know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I liked her. Again, when she was Bernie, because it's the same actress yeah. playing Bernie and, mm-hmm. and Sharon, Bernie didn't have a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she just kind of pined for Steve. But Sharon was in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she did a pretty good job. I liked her.
Yeah, like, and Sharon keeps the plot going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Steve can't speak Italian, so he can't communicate with the people that lived at the house the Red Skull's family used to live in. Yeah. But she shows up and she can speak Italian. She's doing things. She's actively mm-hmm. moving things along. You know, and I was like, okay, that's, I dug that, you know, yeah. again, I still would have preferred Cynthia Rothrock, but the actress we had here did a really good job. And it wasn't just, she did a good job for what she was given. She did a good job and she was given stuff to do.
Yes.
You know, it would have been very easy to just write her as the, and I always forget her name, from the second Indiana Jones movie, who just screams annoyingly all the time.
Willie.
It would have been easy to have made her a Willy-like character, but they didn't do that. They actively made her a big, big part of the movie once she's in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I for some reason, I just clicked on Albert Pyun, mm-hmm. and some of his other movies are Alien from L.A., Doll Man, and Brain Smasher, A Love Story with Andrew Dice Clay and Terry Hatcher. A movie that I'm fairly certain Will is going to pick at some point.
For some reason, I thought that one already had been.
No.
Okay.
Wow. We talked about it.
Well, I can edit this out so Will doesn't get any ideas if you want.
So I don't know if I've got anything else about this movie.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there.
No, go ahead.
Please. No, I really don't either. You know, it's, I think we've gotten more out of it than I think most people would expect, you know.
I think you're right. I think that it's not a good movie. But I think that just because Wizard Magazine says that something is worse than cancer doesn't necessarily make it so. It's not good, but I did find myself kind of like getting into the cheese of it.
Our email address is theshow@earth2.net. That's theshow@earth-2.net. Our voicemail line is 513-EARTH-20. That's 513-327-8420. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, we're at Earth_2. That's Earth_2. Please visit the website, www.earth2.net. That's www.earth-2.net. While you're there, on the left-hand side of the page, you'll see a link that says Forums. Click it and join the forums, please. If you enjoy what we're doing and would like to support Earth2.net and Earth2.net, the show, there are several things you can do. First, make sure to tell your friends about Earth2.net and all of our podcasts. Second, go to iTunes to leave us positive feedback. Third, you can become a patron of the show by visiting patreon.com/earth_2. That's patreon.com/earth_2. And lastly, donations in any denomination can be made by heading over to paypal.me/earth2. That's paypal.me/earth2. There are no spaces, dashes, or underscores, just Earth and the number 2. Until next time, good night.